Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm your host, Laura Coe, and welcome to the show. Today, we have on Terry Cole. Terry is a licensed New York-based psychotherapist, a meditation expert, founder of The Real Love Revolution. For two decades, she has worked with some of the most well-known personalities from international pop stars, athletes, Broadway performers, TV personalities, Fortune 500 CEOs. She empowers over 100,000 women weekly through her published articles, blog posts, therapeutic meditations, courses, and her incredible podcast filled with insane guests, Hello Freedom Podcast. Definitely check it out for you podcasters out there. I'm sure you'll love it. Terry combines practical psychology, Eastern mindfulness, plus the power of intention to create positive behavioral change in true transformation. We got on the phone today, and I've got to tell you, I was literally the edge of my seat listening to each and every word. If you're in a relationship and you're having those same old fights, you've been at it for a long time, you don't want to go to the therapist and sit on a couch for 20 years just to discuss everything to the ground, then Terry is the right person for you. She has absolutely clear steps that I think after being in a relationship for 20 years, everybody could follow, make changes today. And they're not the things that you think. They're actually in contradiction with what I would have thought one should be thinking about in a relationship. It's not about changing the other, the dynamic. It's really about turning inward and learning about yourself. She has a 5-step pillar program. We go into it in detail in this episode, and I'm sure you are going to love it. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode, and I enjoy the show. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. Today, I am joined by Terry Cole. Hey, Terry, thank you so much for joining us.
Why, thanks, Laura. I'm super psyched to be here.
We're just chatting for a couple minutes. We haven't met before. We met through Ashley Turner, who's come on the podcast. And we just said, let's save it, because we're already jumping into a great conversation. But you're a therapist in New York, but on top of it, you've been working in the real love space for a long time with actors, athletes, all sorts of people, in thinking about how to have happiness and have a life that's meaningful, but you have a very different take on it that we were going to save. So talk to me about what this idea of the real love revolution means and what your perspective is on why people who have a lot of success don't have that feeling of happiness that they're really looking for.
Okay, so I'll first say what inspired me to actually create the Real Love Revolution. From being a psychotherapist for almost 20 years, I kept basically seeing the same thing. And this was not just in people looking to be partnered. It was people who were married as well, people who were very successful, people who would be considered, certainly by cultural standards, like, you know, at the top of their game, and still not feeling the happiness or the satisfaction that they're seeking. Mm-hmm. So instead of, like with private clients, you know, I would go through this journey and be like, okay, so here it is. And then finally, I was like, I should be helping like millions of people, not just small groups, yeah. You know. So I created something that could be scaled and could be done internationally in this course. It's a 10-week course. And it's basically the 5 pillars of what I consider real love. Like, what are the things that we need? And so much of the time people are looking on the outside and saying, well, if I just were, you know, in the right place at the right time, and love is all about, you know, luck, and yeah. It's all about calling in the one, and it's all this other crap that I can tell you it's not about that, because wherever you go, there you'll be mm-hmm. with the same crap that has been making you unhappy for as long as it's been making you unhappy. Mm-hmm. So my, you know, really the theory of this whole thing is that self-love, like deep, true self-love and compassion, is the only path to real love of any kind, right? It's not just romantic love. And yeah, I do think that self-love, because if you don't love yourself, if you don't take the time to actually know yourself, so much of the time what people are doing in relationships is that they're basically acting out these unresolved injuries from childhood, looking for a different outcome.
I love that. I love that, because you say it's not magic. Like, people they fall in love, right? There's this haze and this bliss, and there's so much like romantic interest. And then that fades, right? And then you're stuck with what are these sort of taught values, right? I mean, is that kind of the core of it? It's like what you've seen, what you've learned, and it starts to play out?
Yes, but it's a combination. It's not just what you've seen and what you've learned. So yes, that's one thing. And I call that your downloaded love blueprint.
I love that.
Right. So it's like you learn from the culture that you're raised in, the family of origin, the actual culture, the greater culture, your tribe, as to what it looks like. What does love look like? If you grew up in a home where marriage was, how was it regarded? Was it held in high esteem, or was it like the ball and chain? All of those things that seem subtle profoundly impact your view and how you see partnership and marriage, but it's more than that. So what the course does and how we break it down is looking at, yes, so your parents' relationship, who raised you, single parent, multiple parents, were your parents divorced? Was there infidelity? Was there all of those things?
Yeah.
So that's super specific to like whatever happened in your life or whatever happened in my life profoundly impacted what we then thought of marriage or partnership, long-term partnership,
yeah.
You know? So yes, you're playing that out. But as Harville Hendrix would say, do you know Harville and Helen Hendrix? He was the creator of Imago Therapy.
I've heard of it, but I can't say I'm deeply aware of it. So tell me.
Oh my God, I had them on my podcast and I was fangirling out in such an embarrassing way that they were both like, who is this girl and why is she crying? I was like, you guys are amazing. You know, just, you changed my life. He created this couple therapy called Imago Therapy. And his theory is that we'll always find someone who's going to like mirror and sort of challenge our childhood wounds with the hope that together we will work through them. But what happens more times than not is that we just activate the crap out of them in the other person and end up just reliving, where you're like, it's called repetition compulsion, where you just keep doing the same shit over and over again. And it doesn't, you don't get the different result
that
you see, because the mind that created that problem is not the mind that will create the solution.
Got it. So the classic thing in those relationships, I'm in a 20-year relationship, is you blame, right? Like you get in, you could press play, you could hear that fight, you've had it 100,000 times, and it's the other person who's really in your mind, right? Causing that.
Totally, man. If they would just be different, it would all be fine.
If they would fix themselves, I would be fine, right?
Exactly. And I could stop having to fix them.
Yes. Yes. And so that's why I want to leave the relationship, because if I could just find somebody else who doesn't have that problem, then I'll be happy. But in fact, right, what you're suggesting is this comes along with you.
Well, yeah, because you know who's the common denominator in your life?
Right. That's right.
Do you know who?
You.
That's right. You. Yeah. And so wherever you go, there you'll be with the same unresolved issue, unless you've done something to unpack and resolve what that is. If you were parentified as a child, right? So if you were given too much responsibility and too much weight on your shoulders at the age of 7, 8, or 9, it may be difficult for you to let someone else help you because no one was there to help you. So you may either be attracted to someone who's super selfish and doesn't want to help you, or someone who endlessly wants to help you, but you keep blocking them and not letting them. So if you can go, wow, this totally stems from the fact that I was parentified at the age of 7, well, it would be different if I actually let my husband or my wife add value in that way. If I trusted that someone else wants to do it, is capable of doing it, I'm not the only capable person. That's when those injuries start to be healed.
And when you said that when you have those challenges, when those things are repeating, you don't have the operating system to replace it because you're the one doing it. How does somebody then start to make those shifts? What's that process look like?
Well, the 5 pillars, if we're going to talk about them, it always starts with awareness.
Yep.
The beginning is just being like, oh, hey, man, something needs to change.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm aware enough to be like, well, probably me, because it's my life and I'm the one who's been in 17 failed relationships, or I'm the one who's always getting cheated on or always cheating on, or I'm the one. Like, the whole mentality of that blame mentality or the victim mentality there's nothing that will keep you stuck longer or harder than that mentality. And the truth is, the only empowered stance is to be like, okay, if I were to raise my awareness in my own life and of myself, how can I become the observer of myself without judgment? Well, that was curious. Get interested in why you are the way you are in relationships. Become curious about your response and reactions to things, because it isn't about, if you endlessly spend your time either making yourself wrong, like I'm an idiot for doing that, or blaming the other person. If he were just different, then it would all be fine. Both of those things are just these time sucking distractions and diversions from what really needs to happen, which is just looking in. So we start with self-awareness, and then we move into self-knowledge. Oh, maybe I am responding this way to him because of these things. Now, why I created something like this course is because people don't know the exact pointed questions, the empowered questions to ask. You could be in therapy for like 25 years and never get to them.
That's right. And that's what a lot of people, that's what I was going to say, is a lot of people go into these soul searching quests, right? And they don't come out alive. It's like 20 years later and they haven't cracked the shell. So you have certain questions in this course that really help identify how to make that shift within yourself.
Yeah. And just bringing it down, because I've been doing this for almost 2 decades. And I was like, after I decided I would create something that would be accessible to as many people as possible, I was like, then I had to really analyze, which I had never done. What do I do with clients? And I created a million PDFs and downloadable things so that people were, I always gave clients a lot of homework. I was always more of a coach as well, you know, licensed psychotherapist, obviously, but I became a certified coach many years ago because I knew that my whole thing was, I don't want people to be in working with me for like ever. Like,
right.
I'm always the one who's like, I think you should take the summer off. I think you're doing great. I think you got it. And I don't even have that kind of a practice now at all. I have a very small sort of a VIP, more like high-end coaching practice with probably 5 people in it and not more, because I am doing all of this work that hopefully will bring this to more people. But when you have the empowered questions, it's, for some people, transformation can happen in a moment.
Yes.
And of course, there are some things that take a friggin' lifetime. This is called being a human. But there are, I've seen it many, many, many times where someone is just like, wow,
right.
I just never looked at it that way. I never thought of it that way. Let me answer these questions. And then suddenly everything starts lining up where they're like, oh my God, I'm a male basher because my mother was a male basher. Like, holy crap. I don't want to be a male basher. Uh-huh. I don't really feel that way.
Uh-huh.
And then you start to make conscious and intentional choices about how you want to be. What kind of a relationship do you want to be in? And you start committing to learning the skills that you didn't get.
Yeah. Yeah. And so an example of one of those questions, could you throw out one to us? Like, what's one of your getting started questions?
I mean, if we're talking about love, the first one is about the downloaded love blueprint about your family of origin.
Yeah.
And that's definitely, it's a whole thing. And I've got a million of these free online. People don't even have to buy the freaking course. Go to TaylorCole.com and just look for love blueprint. You'll find it. Trust me.
Where I'm going there next.
Asking you about what did your parents' marriage look like? And then we get really specific. Who had the power? Who handled the money? Was there affection, physical, verbal? Was there violence, physical and verbal? Was there abuse? Was there addiction? Was there like everything that you would need to know? So you unpack all of these things and you get to see, okay, so this is what it was. And already people start connecting the dots from the present to the past as soon as you start unpacking those things. But again, it really does take the empowered question because, you know, some people sit in therapy and you could just talk about nothing forever.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, I've been saying this lately and people think it's funny, but I'm a little serious. I have a child now and every day I'm telling him how the world is, right? From, I don't mean to, but it's, you know, this is how we drink water. This is how much juice you can have, whatever, whatever, whatever. It goes on and on and on. It's almost like you're raised in a cult, right? We think of families as like they're not cults, but you're really being indoctrinated into a worldview. Even if, I mean, in my case, I try to leave a lot of space for my son, but regardless, just by the choice of the school I've picked and the house, the environment, the way we interact, it is a system, right? It's an ecosystem. And so it would be kind of nice if at 18, when he leaves, he had like a decultification account. So we had a chance to sort of decide, what is he like about what I've decided with my life and what doesn't he like? And I think family units are something that we just take forward as truths. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, listen, of course, there's a dialogue that you will have with your child as you're a very highly curious and smart person. And you don't, if you are not wholly committed to the way that you're doing it, being the only way, the right way, and that if somebody veers away from that, they're being disloyal. And, right. You know, there's so many cultures where differentiating is just out.
Yeah.
You differentiate and you're like, bye. You're like excommunicated from whether it's the Mormon church or whatever. So
yeah,
certainly there are other more open systems that allow questioning and actually encourage questioning. Well, what do you think about that? And this is how we do it. But what are your thoughts on that as a kid is getting older so that they have the ability to know what they think? But the familiarity, the neural pathways that get laid down in the brain from repetitive understanding about the way things are, repetitive experiences. So much of what we're doing when people come to me, and so much of what we do in this course, is that it's first the self-awareness and then moving into very specific self-knowledge, because that's unique to you. Like what happened in your life is unique to you. So the questions are each person has very varied answers to them, of course. And then we're moving into, once you are aware of it and you have that deeper knowledge, now there has to be acceptance. And so much of the time people live in a certain level of denial about what happened, about the past. And listen, Hey man, I have no interest in the past unless whatever happened there is stopping you from creating what you want now.
Right, right. And to know the difference and not to overcorrect too, right? Like there's that whole, oh, my mom did this one thing and I hate it, so I'm going to be the opposite. Well, then aren't you just a reaction in the opposite way, right? Like You're still not expressing full agency in your life. Yeah, hard to tell though sometimes.
Right, but sometimes you'll course correct or you'll do the over thing and then sort of move back to a place in the middle.
Yeah.
But being mindful so that this first process of these first few pillars of the course and of this process, whether you do the course or not, is the self-awareness, the self-knowledge, the self-acceptance again, and then moving into self-compassion. Because so many of us have such a mean girl, boy, or I call it your mafia mind, where it just endlessly torturing the crap out of you for everything, for all things, for not being enough, for not doing it right, for not being a perfectionist, not being as good as compare and despair. It's like,
right. Because you kind of, this friend of mine had a tough childhood and he's like, you go to therapy and you just stir the soup, you know, of just the misery. So yeah, once you get in there and you start to see the ways that you've been brought up and learn about yourself, that self-compassion becomes critical because it's not about judging it. It's about having the information to make decisions. Is that accurate?
Yes. And actually, you know what, you bring up a really good point, Laura, that people, I feel like there's a reluctance for people to unpack the real memory drawers of their life. Like we have the fake ones or the life light memory drawers of like, or real memories that were great of growing up. But then there's like this whole, depending on how dysfunctional or how painful, how abusive someone's background was, there's this whole other thing where they just cram it in a drawer and they're like, never to be opened. Like it happened. I lived through it. Bye. Like
that would be my partner.
Just done.
Done.
Why we got to look at that. And here's the thing. If nothing is eluding you in your grown-up life, if you're really happy, if you're fulfilled, then there's no reason to go back.
Yeah.
If you fear you'll repeat it with a child that you love now, sure, then you got to go back and not. But the only reason to go back, and I always say this up front when I'm lecturing about this or before the course, is saying, listen, there are so many people who are going to be exceptions to this. Most people take the course because they're in some kind of pain in reference to either have self-esteem, so or they're in a marriage where they're like, wow, is this all there is? Because I thought I would feel different. Is this how I'm supposed to feel? And they're ashamed of that, especially if they have, quote unquote, everything. They've got a nice husband. They've got a nice life.
Because how are we supposed to feel? What's the idea, right? Love forever? Is that the challenge is like deeply passionate?
Well, I mean, everyone has a different idea and there's all different kinds of relationships. You know?
Interesting. So it's not just the fairy tale. It's that people have I'm not feeling the way I should feel because of the way they've framed it. So it just
exactly.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
So, and what they think is important, whether it's, you know, the five love languages, you know, he talks about, you know, what is the way that someone loves you? Mm-hmm. Some people, it's important to them that they be given gifts. And again, why would that be? That would be A, maybe because they like things, I don't know, but also because of this is the way either someone loved them in the past or someone they saw love demonstrated in this way. And so it's the meaning, right, that we assign to these things. So again, there's going to be all kinds of people who, for no good reason, came from the crappiest background you've ever seen in your life. And they've gone on to make super amazing marriages and raise amazingly successful, awesome kids. And they're really happy and successful. Right. And guess what? They don't need the real love revolution because they already figured it out. Right on. Because you'll always have people who say, well, you know, this doesn't fit exactly. This is not to fit exactly. This is, if there is something eluding you in your life, I promise you that we can connect some dots backwards to some original injury that is not resolved. And that's where the stickiness is, and that's where the toxicity is still living. And if that is unpacked properly, there'll be movement. I've seen it because I've helped thousands of women who were trapped, stuck, unhappy, move into understanding. They were just like on the wrong street.
Yeah. Yeah. So you do the work, you recognize, oh, okay, I have an image, a blueprint that it should look this way. My husband should come home with flowers on Fridays. And you can start to say, well, okay, I'm open to the idea that that's something that maybe I've created and it's not necessarily true, and maybe create flexibility around it. But how do you identify the difference between that and like your needs being met at a deeper level and compatibility, working in the relationship? Like, how do you navigate the learned ideas of love versus the real needs being met and feeling, you know, like you're with the right person?
Well, part of it is there are two things: your awareness of this downloaded blueprint, and of how once you kind of get it up into the conscious part of your mind, you can then choose to go, oh yeah, no, that's actually not me. That's what was true for my mother. Mm-hmm. Or my father, but that doesn't have to be true for me, right? So that's one thing. But the other thing is moving into deciding how you want to feel.
Okay.
And when you can consciously, one of my really close friends, Danielle Laporte, wrote this amazing book called The Desire Map.
She's coming on the podcast, in a couple months.
Oh my God, no way, to talk about White Hot Truth?
I'm
just reading her brandy new book right now. I got the pre-copy, wherever the hell it is. So excited.
That's awesome.
She's great. And she's a great friend. And she's really so brilliant. What I love about, I was always all about feelings. Obviously, I'm a psychotherapist. So I always wanted people to identify. But what Danielle has done in this book is she's created a very, like, you just can't do it wrong. You can't do it wrong. You can say you don't know how you want to feel. Well, then take a minute. How about we take a minute and you start figuring it out, start thinking about. And trust me, the moment you start thinking about, how do I want to feel? The answer will come to you. Mm. I want to feel the same everywhere in my life, me personally. Mm. My top core desired feeling is freedom. Mm. So in my marriage, I want to feel free and securely tethered at the same time.
Mm. Nice.
And I do, right? I do. But I work at that. When you can identify how you want to feel, you can work towards, you can make decisions based on, oh, hey, will this thing create that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. Let's see if this thing will create that. Let me think about it. If I had had a desire map prior to my career as a talent agent with supermodels for like God knows how many years, I probably never would have gone into that career because I would have said to myself, hey, is this ever going to make you feel super fulfilled?
Yeah.
And the answer would have been no. And I have no regrets about it, but I'm just saying.
Uh-huh.
If I were younger now, I would certainly look at every decision that I have to make from the point of view of, will this give me my desired feeling? How do I want to feel in a relationship, right? You ask yourself those questions. So to go back to your question, you reject, basically, once you know what the downloaded blueprint is, the paradigm that was created by someone else, like a friggin' blueprint for a house that you didn't design, right?
Yeah.
So you get to restructure that and go, yeah, no, I actually don't care about any of that crap. Like, I don't care. This is what I care about, though. So then we start to design your own love blueprint what does matter to you so that you can actually either attract that in your life or create more of it in your existing relationship. And then the second piece of that is doing the core desired feelings and really asking yourself the questions of how do I want to feel? Do you feel that way in your relationship? And if you don't, what would make you feel that way? Can you have a dialogue? Can you have a conversation? Can you make a simple request? Because another big thing that we do in this course is I teach people how to ask for what they want, how to speak authentically. What are the actual words? Because so many of the time.
You mean you don't just like scream at the person and blame them and say, you suck for not giving me this?
Yeah. You selfish a-hole.
Yeah. That doesn't work. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great, you said freedom with a tethered sense for yourself. And so you recognize this and you speak to your partner and say, what? Like, this is what I've realized in my life. And somebody out there who's in this position, I'm sure, is sitting at the edge of their chair going, give me an example of how to go home to my husband tonight and say it. Mm-hmm. How does that look?
Well, the first thing I'd say you do is you, first of all, think about all the ways that he makes you feel the way you want to feel, all the things that you really appreciate about what he does. Like, I had this brilliant therapist when I was in college, and she'd said to me, I was complaining about my father or my boyfriend, I don't know, both, but I was complaining about my father about how he should have had boys and I was his fourth daughter, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, well, Tara, clearly your father didn't like come in the package that you wanted him to be, like a daddy's little girl, fuzzy, warm, affectionate package, and not the waspy golf playing Wall Street Journal reading Brooks Brothers suit wearing package that he came in. Uh-huh. And she said, but let me ask you something. Can you feel loved by the way he could love you and did love you? And first I was like, what?
Nah.
I don't think so. She's like, no, I want you to try. And so I was like what? She's like, well, what are the things that your father did right for you? And I was like, well, he paid for college. He bought me a car. He fixed my teeth. He used to yell, strap in, when I used to pull away from his house after my parents got divorced. Like,
yeah.
And then she said, can you feel loved by those things? And I was like, yep, mm-hmm. I actually can. And I was so busy focusing on like how he didn't love me right, mm-hmm. that he couldn't verbalize it perfectly and eloquently and didn't write me mushy letters and right. all the things I wanted.
Yeah.
So I feel the same way in relationships, where when you look at the, let's say, the five love languages, you can start to get really specific about how your partner, what they need from you, what is their love language. Like, I think that's one of that is one of the most brilliant books that makes relationship navigation accessible in a way that it's incredible. If you haven't read it, you should.
Yeah.
And if everyone listening should just listen to it on tape,
yeah.
because when you suddenly get it that men, so much of the time, it's like acts of service, let's say, words of affirmation, you know, and some people it is gifts. That's one of the categories, gifts.
Yeah.
Not mine, but other people.
Right. Right. Yeah. And if you don't know that that's what that person is doing, you're not appreciating that even though it's not working for you, that was their intention for the last 5 years. You just didn't see any of it, right? And
yes.
Yeah, that to me.
And what I was going to say is when you become more fluent, you can then tell them like, hey, I super appreciate you doing blah, blah, blah. But I also really love it when you tell me I look nice or you are great. Say thank you for that. I made the bed or that I made dinner. Even if these are things that we do every day, words of affirmation and love are really important to me and make me really feel loved. And I know that you love me, but I just want to make a simple request. If you could try to remember to do that more, and I will, because I know the things that make you feel loved from our discussion of the five love languages. So with guys, a lot of times it's like acts of service. So if you forget to pick up the dry cleaning that they need, it may really hurt their feelings in a way that you'd be like, who gives a crap? We'll get it Saturday. Like, it's dry cleaning. What?
Yeah. Or I'm not your housekeeper. Why is that like so on your mind? And it's not, it's the meaning that you're applying to it that you're misguided. Or a guy who's working tirelessly, right? They just, and they're saying in their head all day, I'm doing this to support my family. I know I'm gone, but this is how I support you. And it's like, if you supported us, you'd be here, right? And it's just this mismatch in what's happening in the person's mind versus your experience of it. And so asking that question is really, really interesting. And the five love languages, it is brilliant. And it's so easy, such an easy thing. It's kind of fun too.
It is. It's so funny. My husband, Vic, and I just revisited it about 2 months ago because we had listened to it a long time ago and I had read it. So I was like, hey, this is what it's about. This is what I think you are. What do you think I am? Blah, blah, blah. And in revisiting it, it was so helpful because I did forget things mm-hmm. about what makes him feel loved, because so much of the time I find with when I used to do couples therapy years ago, like counsel couples, it was all this misunderstanding. It was all of this beautiful, like, love going to waste because the wires were crossed and nobody was like the message of love wasn't getting through. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you have to understand how that person feels loved when you're moving into this last phase of the pillars of this, you know, the Real Love Revolution thing, the last one. So you do, right? Self-compassion is the self-love, right? And then we move into a bonus of self-celebration. So it's not just self-acceptance, which is like, yes, that's cool. And you need to do that. And then it's completely being joyful about who you are and the uniqueness of you and not wanting to be like others and stopping the compare and despair bullshit and really being like, hey man, there's only one me, DNA wise, ever in the history of the world. And the same for you and the same for every amazing soul listening. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to really be able to get to the point of like celebrating that, you know?
Absolutely. And I mean, I can see through the Skype, you have blue eyes. I have blue eyes. To sit here and compare the color of our eyes and mm-hmm. get really down, if my eyes were just slightly like a little lighter blue like hers, I'd be a happier person, right? It's like, it's absurd. But we do this with so many qualities within ourselves and recognizing that you are who you are, and you might as well just enjoy it and celebrate it and own it and, you know, try to take it forward into the world as best you can.
Yeah.
And so one last question on the subject, because I love this, first of all, and I'm completely enthralled in this conversation. If, you know, the five love languages, for example, one person is acts of service and the other person is touch, and you express this to each other, but then one person says, well, I'm not that touchy. So I know you want more touch, but that's just not something that I'm comfortable with. Like, what is that about?
Well, that's about, I don't care if you're comfortable, because being in a relationship that's going to work means that we all agree that we're going to be uncomfortable sometime for the greater good of the union.
I see.
Because this is my two cents on marriage or long-term relationships is that once you enter into one, so much of your mind needs to be, how is this going to impact? Is this good for the relationship or bad for the relationship? Will this strengthen the relationship or weaken my relationship? And if you have done your own personal work, you don't need to be like proving crap endlessly in your relationship. Like my agreement with my husband is that whoever's cracking up first gets to be the one who's cracking up. So the other person, if one person's losing their mind, you can't join in and start losing your mind. That's just our agreement, right? I teach, you know, couples how to do a couple's vision and they meet once a week or every other week called State of the Union. It's like, I have this whole thing that people do to keep current mm-hmm. with the other person. Mm-hmm. So going back to your specific question, there are things that we do, like I see a lot of live classical music because my husband really is really into it.
Okay.
And he loves it. And he's basically an aficionado. And I mean, nobody would know that but me, but you know, he knows everything about the composer and the time period. And he'll tell me about the, whatever that guy's name is, you know, who's what's he called?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Like the guy leading it. You guys know the band leader. It begins with a C. I can't remember.
Shoot, the conductor.
Yes. The conductor. Oh my God. That's so embarrassing. He would cry. I'm sure he will not hear this, so we don't have to worry about it. But anyway, this is one of those things that I don't need to assert myself, right? I knew that Vic loved this. I want him to be happy. I may not be interested in classical music. Even 20 years later, I'm kind of not that much, but I'm super interested in him.
Mm. Mm, that's so beautiful. So if I'm hearing you, it's really, if you're looking at the hierarchy, it's much less about meeting your own self needs all the time and thinking about the relationship and the global needs of it as an entity that you're both working within, instead of I need to feel happier. I need to to meet my needs. Yeah. Is that?
Yes. Because the more that you are willing, and I don't mean having the disease to please. And I'm not talking about constantly acquiescing because you're afraid of conflict or you're afraid of confrontation. Like, not that.
Yeah.
I mean, meeting in the middle with love, with equanimity. I mean, asking your partner, how can I best support you right now if they're having a rough day? Right. I mean, my husband and I, whoever gets up last makes the bed. And really, sometimes I don't even do it. He does it like almost all the time. But every time I see the bed, I yell down, "Hey, babe, thanks for making the bed." Mm-hmm. If he empties the dishwasher, if I empty the dishwasher, he's so funny. He's a recovering Catholic. So he'll always say, I was going to do it. I'm like, "Babe, you don't always have to do everything. I can do something." Like, he overfunctions like crazy, which is fine. It's great because I could be a little lazy. Like, we fit like a hand in glove. As I like to say, the cracked pot finds the cracked lid. But you can never be too polite.
Oh, right.
You can never be too grateful. You can never be too appreciative of your person. Yeah. Vic does so much for me, and hi, he doesn't work for me.
Right.
Like, he's not an employee.
I know. What is it about long-term relationships where you lose that? Because everybody starts off on their P's and Q's, and then there's something that slips in. I've been saying lately, it's like two CEOs running a company with no board of directors, right? Like, it's like you have equal power, and you're not without a reason to behave. People seem to slowly slip.
Yeah. It's also about being able to say you're sorry. Mm-hmm. Just saying you were right.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, I work so hard to like get off of that need to be right. And listen, you live with someone and we spend tons of time together because we both are independent contractors. He's a political artist. We both, you know, we have two residents, but we both were usually together. So it's like, we spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know when you signed on with your person, you know things about them. These are things that are not going to change. So you either have to decide you're going to have the same mother effing fight for your entire effing life, which I'm not willing to do.
Right.
Or you're going to go with my husband. He's so weird. Doesn't matter where we're shopping. Uh-huh. We're at a grocery store. He will leave the line and like go get this really expensive bottle of olive oil that we don't need. It'll be small. It'll be $40. It'll be crazy. Like, he's crazy. So for a while, I would be like, dude, we do not need any more. Like, what are you doing? And then I just was like, you know what, Tara? He does not waste money. Maybe he just fucking wants to do that.
Right.
Just leave him alone.
Right.
Just let him. You know he's going to leave the line. Let him leave the line. You know he's going to get something you may not want. Don't say anything.
Yeah.
Just let him fucking buy it.
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
You know, like, it's so easy to get caught in that same
loop. And it's like, I just want new fights every decade. I don't want to have the same one. I'm just like, I hate hearing myself even. I'm like, oh my God, the fact that I could like repeat what I might say in a given moment makes me crazy. Right. It's like,
it's so boring.
It's so boring. It's so boring. There's got to be another version. I mean, you're making me laugh because I go to the grocery store with my partner, and I swear it's like taking a child to a candy store. She just disappears and wanders for the whole time. And I'm like, really? Like, am I the mom who grocery shops? Like, today, is that really my job every single time? But you know what? She's happy. I actually like being the one who is in control of those kinds of things. So you got to ask yourself that deeper question. Like, you know, I think a lot of women, they say they want help, they want participation, they want equal, but they kind of want to call a lot of the shots in some of those situations. It's like, you know, you got to let go of the things that, you know, are you fighting to just fight, or is it really meaningful to you? Yeah.
Yes. And how about you do the things that you do best, she does the things that she does best, I do the things, Vic does the things. Like, there's no way that we all do things as well as the other. So I feel like you can set yourselves up as a couple. All couples can set themselves up to succeed by really, instead of saying, well, I always do whatever. Uh-huh. From the beginning of my relationship with my husband, the first time that he restacked the dishwasher, the first time I stacked it, he restacked it. Uh-huh. I was like, hey, do you like that to be done a certain way?
Yeah.
He was like, yeah. I was like, cool. So that could be your job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do a different job that doesn't have to have that be right. Like, it doesn't have to be like that. Same thing with packing the groceries. The first time he ever, I think we were dating for 2 weeks, he unpacked what I packed. I was like, never again. And in 20 years, I've never packed another grocery bag.
But you have to like let it go. I mean, what I keep hearing you say in these stories is that you then let it go, because people then say, they use that. They like store it and then say, oh my God, I'm always the one that's packing the groceries or stacking the dishes. And, you know, you start comparing your lists. And isn't it more about finding what you're comfortable with than starting to, because how do you rank order these things? I mean, you know, they all have different levels of value, and it's kind of hard to kind of figure out, well, who's doing the most. And I just feel like that conversation is the doorway to hell.
Without a doubt. And the thing is, I do it more because this whole setup is like a what about me conversation.
Uh-huh.
And when you can switch your framework to a what about you conversation, how can I best support you? What can I do right now to add value to your life? What would make like my Vix is endlessly thinking about making my life easy. That's a fact. Endlessly. Of what can he do to make my life? It doesn't matter. He's like the mom to a degree. So he's packing water and he's packing me a snack and he makes sure that there's food and that there's toilet paper and that there's all of those things. I do other things.
Yeah.
But it makes me feel so loved because he's always thinking about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always thinking about us in the greater sense. We have kids, we have grandkids. I'm always thinking about how are we seeing everyone at Christmas and booking those tickets 3 months in advance and making sure that we travel and making sure that we see the people we need to see and handling our social calendar. And do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So it's just about doing the things that you both can contribute and staying appreciative of the differences, not weighing them out all the time as you know, one's better than the other.
Yes. And one shift, if you were to do one shift, anybody listening, if you're in a relationship, then quickly, I want to hit the singles who are listening as well. If you were to change one thing and walking into your house tonight, walking into your apartment, going with your partner, do something completely different and totally selfless.
Mm.
Like just something, do something you know that they would love. They want you to do this thing sexually that you never want to do, or they want you to do, you know what I mean? Or they'd be super stoked if you initiated sex, like that would make them feel great. Or if they came in and you were kind of in something skimpy and you were like, hey, want to fool around?
Yeah.
That would really make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Because here's the thing, you guys, people are not here forever. Like, think about that.
Yeah.
If your partner were abducted by aliens right now,
mm-hmm.
would you regret not having taken a risk or not having put in more of an effort or not loved them harder or more selflessly? You might.
Yeah.
I don't know. Listen, I don't know people's relationships. I just know that I recently had a really traumatic and horrendous death in my family of my niece who's 18 years old. And it really makes you just wake up to be like, oh, wow, this is not forever.
Yes. Yes.
Something could happen. And would you be like, wow, but they really were annoying when they slept and snored? Like, you wouldn't.
No.
You would be like, oh my God, I'm never going to get to have that conversation. I'm never making love to them again. I'm never making dinner with them again. I'm never laughing about stupid things with them again. Whatever it is that you love to do with your person.
Yeah. And this desire to constantly be seen and heard and valued, the way to often get that is through contribution, right? So while we're desperately clinging to getting like, well, you're not seeing me here, we're like screaming about how you didn't recognize I emptied the dishwasher. In fact, when you're contributing at a very high level is when people are really seeing you and giving you that acknowledgement that you're really craving. So it's it works opposite, I think, than most of us believe. We think the harder we scream about getting heard or seen, the more it might happen. But in my experience, it's the more I give, the more people say, oh my God, that was amazing. And I don't even care then. I'm just like, oh, because I did it for some genuine place.
Yep.
I don't even need that praise because I did it for my own reasons because it made me happy.
And what does Deepak say about this? I can tell you. If you want more love, be more loving.
Yep. Yep.
If you want more money, be more generous.
Yep.
There's this whole theory of like the law of giving and receiving, but there's something about be the change you want to see in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's Gandhi, you know, my take on Gandhi's, you know, famous saying.
Yep.
And if we're moving briefly, sort of, I just told that person it's going to be later. So I just want to hit the singles thing for a sec, because I feel like we really spoke a lot specifically about people in relationships. And I specifically made two tracks in this course because the five pillars affect everyone. And so, of course, people who are single are going to, and there's many ways of being single. You've got the serial monogamists who are just waiting for their next relationship. You've got the people who are dating the wrong person over and over again. The narcissist, the Peter Pan syndrome, the broken winged boyfriend or girlfriend, the drug addict, the abuser, the, you know, there's a whole list. I did a huge survey about a year ago and just got all this information about what's happening. And what was amazing is that like 65% of the people said that they did not have a successful or a healthy role model when it came to healthy love in their life, which is a lot of people. And 93% said that they believed that real love was possible for them in their lifetime, which I thought was incredibly hopeful.
Wow. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when you're looking at, so how do all these things apply when someone is single? You have different empowered questions, and then you dive into your attraction style based on your downloaded blueprint, right? So we see our father, and this becomes in some way, or our mother, both parents, actually, whether straight, gay, it doesn't matter. It's like both parents, we internalize traits of both of them. Hopefully, if you've done your work, I like to say that Vic is like a combination of the best of both of my parents, because he was in his early 40s and I was in my early 30s when we got together. You know, we both had done a lot of therapy. Uh-huh. But there's two things that we really look at besides the family of origin work, sure, that's there, of why you're attracted to whom you're attracted to. Why does that person fall into the category of appropriate mate material? So those are all those empowered questions. And then we get into attachment styles. So this is like it's like, you know, like a love science, basically, around what is your attachment style. Your attachment style, the three main ones are securely attached, which is probably half the population is that way. Anxiously attached, probably 20%. And avoidantly attached, probably 20%. And so this is something that, you know, we can put a link up to whatever, if you want to give people like a way that they can look at these things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's interesting to see what is your attachment style. Because if you are insecurely attached, meaning anxiously attached, you would do well with a securely attached person better, but you will probably be attracted to an avoidant.
Interesting. What's the difference between an insecurely attached and avoidant attached?
Insecurely attached is you're very preoccupied with what your mate is doing, thinking, feeling. You don't think that they feel worried. They don't feel as much as you do, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Avoidant is someone who really has like the intimacy issues, where intimacy, as much as they want it and they crave it, makes them feel like they're going to die, like they're being smothered. They can't fucking deal. They're like, oh,
okay,
sorry,
got it.
I just cursed.
No, that's okay. That's okay. You got it. I figured it was avoidance, but I wasn't sure in what way. So yeah, so the insecure would go for the avoidant, which would make sense, right? Because they're not really comfortable.
And you're like, this is, and again, you want to talk about bringing back into your life now what is unresolved from the past. So much of the work that I do with people who are single in the course is about really unpacking this and understanding it. Because the moment that you have this material that comes from the basement of your mind or your subconscious mind, as we move it up into the main part of the house or your conscious mind, it's like the power that it has to drive your behavior is lessened considerably. And with some people, it's lessened altogether.
Right, right.
It's just the knowing it, being like, oh my God, that totally makes sense.
Right,
it's
right.
It's not like something's mortally wrong with me, or like, you know, it's not chronically or fatally, it's not some fatal flaw that I have.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't it?
And there's a reason, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we can walk around all day long with all these thoughts and experiences and patterns of behavior and be unconscious to them is just an incredible, you know, way of living as a human being, right? So to bring that stuff into our consciousness, we think, well, I don't want to do that. Like, that's a waste of time. Why would I do that? And it's like, you're talking to yourself all day long. Your pattern of behavior playing out all day long. Either you master it or it just runs your life, you know?
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's either you're the tsunami that happens to the little boat, and the little boat is your life, or life is the tsunami and you're the little boat just holding on for dear life.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires intention, mindfulness, awareness, and then the desire to change it and the willingness to do the work.
That's right. That's right. Terry, I could talk to you for hours. This was just amazing. This is such incredible information. I know for myself, this was just a wealth of information to hear about, but I'm sure for everybody out there listening, they've enjoyed it as well. If they're looking for all of these resources, more information about you, the Real Love Revolution, where do they go?
Well, we actually have a landing page, which is going to be, I think you have it. already. But yes. So, or should I say what it is anyway?
TerryCole.com, and it'll be at the Real Love Revolution.
Hold on. I don't know. I got to look. I thought we knew, but hold on.
Throw it up on my website.
Yeah, sure. Throw it up on the website, because right now there's a waiting list.
Real Love Revolution. Yeah. TerryCole.com/Real Love Revolution.
You're the best. See, I don't even know. I just do the content.
I have my inside sources.
I love it. But I'm actually going to be starting this Facebook group that's completely free. I've got all these amazing videos out there on my YouTube channel, which is just Terry Cole. 20-minute videos on all this stuff, on codependency, narcissism, how to create an amazing relationship, how to decode your own what happened in your life. And then we're going to be doing this Facebook group where I'm going to be live every week, answering people's questions. All of this is leading up to the course, which doesn't start until February 1st. So I'm giving away a ton of stuff before that. And even if people don't want to do the course, can't do the course, I feel like there's so much value that we're just going to give, because I feel like everyone deserves the kind of love that I thought was never possible for me. I really didn't think it was. And the fact that if I can do it, wow, I swear anybody can do it.
Well, thank you for sharing your information and value with people out there who, you know, are potentially stuck and not having the relationships they're looking for, and, you know, bringing this out to the world.
Right. Oh, well, thanks, Laura, for having me. Let's do it again. It was so much fun.
I would love that. I would love that.
Great. All right. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Hey, before you go, I have a quick question for you. Have you ever considered coaching? If you have no idea what coaching is, no worries. It's basically like a personalized workout program, but instead of doing 100 squats and a million sit-ups, you're working out your mind, your well-being, and your emotions. Coaching is about setting goals and taking action to create a life that's meaningful to you. As we navigate through life and ask ourselves the tough questions, what do I want? What makes me happy? How do I build a life that works for me? Just like we talk about on the podcast, how do I have success, but have success that's authentic and meaningful? In part, the tactics play a huge role. Setting goals, having priorities that make sense, and making sure you're organized with your lists. After running a company for 15 years, I help my clients with that all the time. But coaching takes it even further. We remove all that stuff, all those mental obstacles that get in your way when you're trying to make those tough life choices. If that sounds interesting to you, come on over to lauraco.com, click on the contact form and send me a note, or at the bottom of the homepage, you'll see a button where you can click and set up a call with me. Just like that, it's free. We'll chat, we'll find out what's going on and see if it makes sense for me to help you out. No strings attached. I hope to hear from you. And again, thank you so much for tuning in. I really value each and every one of you.